as the Prophet Muhammad said, an activity of God. As the Bible says, we were made in God's image and likeness. Well, certainly what's made in the divine image has got to be perfect. And what's perfect is our soul. So our soul is also a hidden treasure. According to Hazrat Inayat Khan, the most important aspect of developing our inner understanding is to begin to identify our real self as our soul, and to look at life, to hear life, to sense life from the vantage point of our soul. Because the soul is perfect, nothing we can do to it could ever improve it, and no sin or mistake we ever make could ever diminish it. What does Inayat Khan mean when he says for us to say in the prayer, the healing prayer, "Beloved Lord Almighty God, through the rays of the sun, through the waves of the air, through thy all-pervading life and space, purify and revivify me, and I pray, heal my body, heart, and soul." Why would the soul need to be healed if it's perfect, if nothing can be done to improve it or to diminish it? And the answer to that is why there's a spiritual path, you see. Because there are two ways to proceed on the spiritual path. One is to identify with that perfection. And as such, we wouldn't be saying toward the one, we would be saying, "I am the one," you see. But that's one pole of the spiritual path. The other pole of the spiritual path is toward the one, is our aspiration, is our growth, acknowledges our limited condition. And acknowledging our limited condition, where we find ourselves in limitation, offers a pathway to completion, to reconnection with the source. Because what happens in our incarnate experience is that we lose touch with our source. Rumi describes it as, "I was a hollow reed that was a part of the reed bed, and I got plucked apart from the reed bed." In other words, the soul is disconnected from the source in the course of incarnation. It's never disconnected because its essence is identical with the source, but it experiences disconnection. And it experiences disconnection because of the nature of life, which Inayat Khan describes. It says the nature of the soul is like the human eye, E-Y-E. It looks out. Actually, it's a dot and a circle, too. But it looks out. And it can see everything is reflected within it. But the one thing it can't see is its own self. It sees everything, but it has to know itself by what is reflected within it. And so everything becomes a mirror of its own essence, but it loses track of it.
This is a tune called Lorelei.
And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, and that was the Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and we're going to have a really fun show today. We're talking about keeping ourselves, our hospitals, and our emergency system healthy, and I am honored to have Dr. Wayne and Nani Fukino in the studio with me. They are here from the West Side, and we're going to learn all kinds of things from them. But in the meantime, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Bikram Yoga.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Bikram Yoga Kauai, located in Kapa, provides authentic Bikram Yoga. A 90-minute beginner's series is practiced in a heated studio with newly remodeled hot showers and changing rooms. All levels welcome. Improves physical health and overall well-being. Boutique open and classes available 7 days a week. KauaiBikramYoga.com or 823-9642.
Want to make a difference? The Masters of Education and Teaching program at the University of Hawaii Manoa College of Education will train you to become a highly qualified secondary school educator with dual licensure in special education in an academic content area such as math, science, social studies, or language arts. Coursework combines traditional classroom instruction with the flexibility of online learning and can be completed within 2 years. The deadline to apply is March 1st, 2016. For information, call Janet Kim at 808-726-0054. That's 808-726-0054.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And we have Marshall in the studio with us also.
Aloha.
Aloha. And in a while, he'll be helping with answering the phones. We're going to begin with Dr. Wayne Fukino. Let's see if you're mic'd up.
Am I mic'd up now?
You are. And Nani?
Aloha, this is Nani Fukino.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so I've been reading the papers, I've been paying attention, and there's a lot happening across the island that has to do with medical. And so I've asked you guys in because it seems like that you are knowledgeable about what's happening at a number of areas, but including Kauai Veterans Medical Hospital. A Memorial Hospital, right? KVMH, Kauai Veterans Memorial Hospital. And Dr. Fukino, you are an emergency room doctor there, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I looked in the paper. I've been seeing it around. Had people emailing me. A lot of people are very concerned that both KVMH and then Sam Mahilona Memorial Hospital in Kapa'a, probably along with the rest of the state hospitals, are underfunded. And I would like to hear your mana'o on that. Probably let's start with Waimea.
Well, I kind of start from the, I'll have to start from the beginning actually a little bit. I came here in 1987, that's 30 years ago now. And when I got here, that was a little hospital in the state Department of Health. And you know, when it rained, we actually put buckets in the hall and towels on the floor. And the fixtures filled up in the nursery, so we used to move babies out in the nursery when it rained. Couldn't ever get the roof fixed. And so what happened in 1996, the governor got together a blue ribbon panel, and that panel took a look at the hospital system and the Department of Health to find out a better way to do things. The state estimated $250 million deficits going forward, and that's a big chunk and inefficient. So the Blue Ribbon panel said that what you needed to do is get people actually knew how to run the system to run it, and that the legislature needed to step back and you needed to get that out of the bureaucracy and allow them to actually manage a system as you would do any other hospital system. And so that was undertaken in 1996. And so in 1990, you're looking at a change of $250 deficit down to $40
million in 1998. $250
million.
So that's a big difference.
That is a huge difference.
Wow. How much does it cost to run a hospital in a year?
Well, operating costs started back then at about $250, and now they're upwards of close to $600 million operating costs.
Wow.
You know, $500 to $600 million. But our revenues are rising also. So it's not like that gap is getting big, because over the next almost 10 years, from 1998 to 1996, that would be 8 years, the deficit stayed right around $40 million. And the big change came in 2006 when what happened was the, I guess under leadership in the legislature, they created, again, independent regions, which basically meant that each region had to have their own CEO, CFO, and administrative staff.
What does a regent mean? I know CEO is chief executive officer and chief operating officer, so that means your main administrators, but what's a regent?
Actually.
Or you're saying region.
Region, that's my mispronunciation
okay,
there.
Okay, region. Okay, sorry. Region, each region. So Kapaa would be a region, Waimea would be a region.
Yeah, if you're talking about on this island, but really in the system, it would have been Kauai is one region.
Okay.
East Hawaii, West, East Hawaii, West Hawaii, Maui would be another region, and Honolulu.
Okay, so our two hospitals share the same intuit lead administrators, the chief executive officer and the chief operating officer.
Yes, we do. We're one region, and that's one of the things we were disappointed when we saw the article in paper. I mean, I was not disappointed that just after the demonstration that we had, we ended up taking a pretty good nice chunk of that front page.
You did.
And you know, it's pretty good if you can actually move the governor over to the left side and decrease the font. But in any case, we were able to generate some interest there. And we were kind of disappointed we also didn't have SAVE, KVMH, and SMMH because we actually demonstrated out there for also San Mahilona. We had signs saying that San Mahilona, 99 years of services to Kauai, to our community. So both of these hospitals have been there for a long time serving our communities.
And for the people who aren't fully familiar with what these different hospitals do, like when I think of Sam Mahilona, it is more long-term care for elderly and infirm and then a psychiatric care as well as an emergency room. Do I have that correct?
You have that correct. They started off as a TB hospital.
That means tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis and they have long-term care when tuberculosis was managed a little better. They took a long-term care function. They are the only psychiatric facility on the island. And we added, in an attempt to improve revenues, we added an ER there and have some acute care beds.
So ER is emergency room?
Yeah, and became a critical access hospital. And what that was is a designated from the federal government designation that allowed us to get a little better reimbursement, cost plus about 10%, and that improved the financial situation in the region as a whole because both KVMH and San Mahilona became critical access hospitals.
Now, I know this week we've lost a lot of people, but among the people who we've lost is Dr. Kekuni Blaisdell. Did you know him?
Very well.
He seemed like a pretty amazing individual.
He certainly was. He was one of a handful of Hawaiian physicians in the early part of in the 50s and the 60s.
And his commitment was medical care for Hawaiian people.
His commitment was medical care for Hawaiian people, but I think he realized that if we were able to take care of Hawaiians, we'd be able to take care of everybody else because the kuleana extends beyond just the family. It was basically he was a sovereignty kind of guy, and mm-hmm. If you think about a kingdom or managing things, if this was still the kingdom of Hawaii, it would look just like we look today. We'd have a mix of races
yes.
and people.
Yes, and we're all part of the Hawaii.
And so we'd have to take care of everyone. And I think Kekuni saw that. He knew there was a special need for Hawaiians.
And Mahilona Hospital, was that ever targeted at one population, or has it always been for all people?
It's always been community.
Okay. So just wanting to appreciate Mahilona, because I know a lot of people don't really understand the service that provides. Sometimes family members can't take care of their aged person or a person who has lost their strength. When somebody goes in there, is there a bill that the family pays, or does the state pay for that extended care?
You know, it depends.
The insurance.
I mean, basically, you'll have some Medicare. You might have Medicaid helping. There's some assistance there. Sometimes families will pay. It all depends on the financial situation.
And so KVMH, most people call it by those letters, and Kapaa they call it Mahilona, but KVMH, I think of that as a place where people have babies, a little bit of long-term care, and then emergency services.
Yes, but in addition to that, we also have an ICU.
Intensive care.
We do surgeries. Until about 2 years ago, we had orthopedic services with Dr. Gotting, and some people out here might be familiar with him. These are things that that's one service that we've lost, partly because of the financial stresses.
So this has been a problem for a couple of years, or a number of years, but I remember 2 years ago there was, and 2.5 years ago there was a whole effort at music concerts and different fundraising. Everybody was struggling to try and keep hospital beds going, and I think that a number of the staff were actually cut at that time. Is that correct?
Yes, over the years, the recent years, we've had to have RIFs, and our last one was last year, and we had to RIF 36 individuals.
What does RIF mean?
That means to let them go. Your services are no longer needed, but they're needed, but we can't
afford it.
Yeah, we can't afford it.
So the people left, are they serving as many clients?
No, I don't know. They may be in totally different areas of the government. Some of them may have moved away.
I'm meaning like you have as many patients, regardless of the staff has been cut.
So certainly.
The remaining staff is working harder.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's occurring. This is overtime, and our staff is being stretched. If you ask the legislature, in truth, they never said they're going to close us. But with the stresses that the financial shortfall is doing, it's kind of like, finally said, it's like pulling on a rubber band. You stretch it, it still works, and at some point it breaks. And so right now I'm not sure how far we can continue to stretch that rubber band before it breaks. But we're continuing to deliver excellent care despite the challenges that are there.
I will say I know people who live on the North Shore and in Lihue, and they still yet go to KVMH to have their babies.
Yes, they do. And I can tell you when they call in, sometimes we tell them, I think you better stop at Wilcox because that baby sounds like that baby's going to pop up. And sometimes they just keep on going, or they'll stop at the fire station at Hanapepe because 20 will come to KVMH and 24 goes to Wilcox. So they'll make it over the hill down and sometimes stop.
When you're giving us a number like 20 or 24, does that mean the ambulance?
That is the those are the ambulance. 24 takes care of Koloa and Poipu.
So does that mean we have more than 24 ambulances on the island?
No, that doesn't.
Okay.
And folks on the North Shore know that we don't have 24 ambulances.
Well, I think we got one up here. Yeah. Sometimes, too, it's around the corner from me, so I can see when they're there. So when we're looking at this potential change or the economic situation there, you guys were out there. I am assuming you were among those standing in front of the park in Waimea.
Yes.
It looked like there's probably 100 or more people.
Well, maybe we didn't quite make 100 in the afternoon, but we had more than 50. And we had children and families and one of our patients in a wheelchair. And these people came out to support the hospital.
So when I posted that, I want to give a shout-out to Representative Dee Morikawa, who is from your district. And so she had commented, and so she, I can pull it up, but I believe she mentioned 2.5 million coming and 30 million total for state hospitals. I've invited her to call in. She's going to, if she can, she's at committee meeting. So if she can get a break, she's going to call in and be able to share in this conversation with us. When she said that, is that coming out of the grant and aid? Is that a definite amount of money that might come? I mean, it sounds like it's close to what is needed.
Well, actually, we read a letter from the CEO, and this is for the last fiscal a biennial budget, and for the first year of FY 2016, it was a $50 million deficit. And there'd be a shortfall in 2017 fiscal year of $90 million.
90 or 19?
90, 9-0.
9-0. So deficit means that's a negative cash flow. It's more that you need. So it's not debt. It's like what you're not getting. So, $600 million, that's a lot of money. I don't know how many people live on the west side, maybe 10,000? Do you know what the population is?
Close to that. It's close to that.
It's close to that. So that's a lot per head, right?
Well, it's not to just KVMH.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about Hawaii Health Systems Corporation, 12 hospitals, including two long-term care, Maluhia and Leahi, on Oahu.
They're in this $600 million.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I feel much
actually,
better. All right. I was thinking that is an incredible amount of money to spend for 10,000 people. Hopefully not everybody is sick.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got numbers here. From 2014, the total operating expense was $737 million. Operating revenue was $576 million. So the shortfall there was $160 million in 2014. There were some other $12 million in other revenues. So there's a lot of numbers. So basically what it means that even though the taxpayer from the general fund will put out money, the hospitals generate the majority of their operating
and presumably
needs.
That's coming from health insurance companies. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Marshall with Kauai Soapbox and Dr. Wayne Fukino, who is the emergency room physician at Kauai Veterans Memorial Hospital in Waimea, is in here helping me. And it sounds like you are an accountant more than just a doctor. So are you kind of doing double shifts on that? Are you part of the board or, you know, like... Do most doctors have to have this kind of knowledge on the financial structure of the hospital they work in?
I think doctors are kind of astute enough about the numbers that they have interest in them. Like they don't get all the numbers. I just dig for them. And I've spent 30 years dealing with this. So I ask the questions. I ask how much do we need, how much do we make, how can we improve things. You know, part of the reason our operating cost has risen is because prior to the creation of the independent regions, which necessitated increase in administrative overhead, our overhead was less those high-paying positions in the regions. So basically you multiplied your administrative costs when the legislature created that. Because HHSC prior to that suggested that they don't do that. Because it would do that. It would raise administrative costs.
And HHSC is the acronym for the name of the company that manages the hospitals.
It is the acronym for the department within the state of Hawaii, the Hawaii Health Systems Corporation. So previously the hospitals were under the Department of Health. Everybody understands that. When the legislature created the Hawaii Health Systems Corporation, in essence it was a state entity, a department, under the Department of Health, and just another state agency.
So it is probably like the Agribusiness Development Corporation is to the Department of Agriculture. It's what's called a development corporation. It's a nonprofit that's allowed to make money. Because usually when there's something called, but you have the corporation, HHSC. Okay, well, anyway, it's a state agency but is running somewhat like an independent governing body of your hospitals. So I want to ask you a couple of questions because I'm hearing that there's really a problem, and if that rubber band breaks, that means there's no West Side Hospital, possibly no East Side Hospital. So what can people do to alleviate that? I mean, how can people help? People probably realistically can't cough up $3 million. In a GoFundMe account. I think you do have a GoFundMe account. Is that right?
Not yet, but the cat's out of the bag. So we're, you know, if we don't, it's kind of a stage thing. If we don't get the support we need, we may have to do that as a community. We may actually have to take that step. We haven't done that step yet.
I'd go hit up the Navy. I mean, you know, I'm thinking who can cough up that kind of cash? You know, maybe they can. We had the commander of the base in here. He seems like a nice guy, not that it's at all up to him. So I see you've got a very creative, I like this, little flyer for fundraising. It is mostly asking people to email the legislatures at either SENS, like senators, S-E-N-S, at capital.hawaii.gov, or reps at capital.hawaii.gov. And that's capital with an O, not an A. And you would basically put in the subject line, please fund our state hospitals if people were wanting to support this effort.
Yes, it is. And, you know, one of my one of our nurses wrote a letter, and she told me, she said, you know, I got a nice letter back from the governor. And she said, he said, you know, in the government, we decide on a path that we're going to go on, and we continue on that path as long as nobody says anything. And, you know, I've heard what you have to say, and if I hear more of it, then we'd have to reevaluate the course we are taking. And that's kind of how government,
right,
you know, works.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
And that's a paraphrase. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And on the west side, I guess our guys there have never grumbled too much. When they created HHS, Hawaii Health Systems Corporation, the first iteration of it, when it first began, we were asked to make some significant cuts. And we did. We bite the bullet, we make the cuts, we work through everything. And so our communities, both North Shore and West Side, do that. We, you know, put your shoulder to the wheel and you push and you grind on. But at this point, we're asking the legislature to do their duty to the state, because that's one of the requirements in the state constitution, is to see for the welfare of the community. And, you know, as a state agency, I'll say a little bit about this. In medical economics, there's this guy, U.A. Reinhardt, who's an economist from medicine. And he said there are three things you got to take care of in medicine. You got the quality. Everybody understands that. You've got cost. You want to be cost efficient. And then there's accessibility. And there are three things, but you can only pick two and take care of two. So the question is, what two are you going to take? Now, the state has an interest in giving some parity to equality to our people who maybe can't get what they get in the city. And so that's accessibility. So for the Hawaii Health System Corporation, it has been accessibility to quality care, which is your safety net function.
And I know that when I go in and visit friends at Wilcox Hospital, oftentimes it is close to capacity. Sometimes the waiting room in the emergency is a very long time, not always. How is your capacity? Are you pretty full at your hospital, or is it got, you know, pretty open availability?
We wax and wane. I mean, we can be full with nothing, no room left, and we hold them in the ER, or we can have a lot of space. It's as simple as Wilcox. And at Mahilona, we're seeing probably about the same number, about 7,000 a year that we're seeing in at Waimea. You know, Mahilona sits in the population center of the island, so that's a nice convenience for people. But we do that.
So you're a little bit older than me. Did you grow up on Oahu?
Yes, I did.
So I don't know if you followed this or not. I'm just following it from learning. I didn't experience it. During President Richard Nixon's administration, a lot of the state hospitals were closed across the country. And what happened with that is the psychiatric patients ended out on the street. A lot of people ended out as homeless. It was like we opened our doors. And so it's up for argument whether people would rather be housed in a room in a hospital, or if they'd rather be out on the street, you know, free but suffering. To me, that's a concern that I see. I have a number of friends that I have seen that are in Mahilona Hospital, and I don't know where they would be if they couldn't be there. So do you consider that as maybe part of an outcome? Like if these hospitals were closed, is this people that maybe who couldn't be taken into the private system at Wilcox? I mean, is it supporting and lifting the load off on these non-paying people, or could Wilcox absorb a lot of this challenge?
You know, it's a point where Wilcox might have to, but I think the Department of in the Department of Health, some of that is covered not so much by HHSC, but the Department of Health has their psychiatric units. And I'm sure we'd hit a crisis and somebody would come up with a crisis solution. And so we'd have some psychiatric services there. But as far as the services in general are, I think everybody understands there's a lack of those services on every island.
Well, I'd like to think that you're right. I'm going to probably slightly disagree with you, because when I do spend time, and I do spend time with people who are houseless, many of them, I would say, we haven't met the crisis. There are people who probably really do need a service like what is there. We have a caller. Thank you for holding. Aloha. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Dee Morikawa.
Hey, Dee. How are you? Representative.
Hi,
thank you so much for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about the funding for the state hospitals. I have Dr. Fukino in here and Nani Fukino. And what's your mana'o? I appreciate the efforts that you share.
Well, I do know that the HHSC did come in with their supplemental budget request earlier when session began. And since then, well, just last week, the governor had put in another request for another $21 million on top of that.
What was the original request amount?
I don't know what that is, but it was an amount that was agreed upon by the whole system.
Okay.
And at that time, I was told by HHSC that, Kauai anyway, that they had made the tough cuts and had gone down to bare bones as much as possible, and they would be able to maintain that. So this additional infusion would definitely help them.
So
but that amount hasn't been decided on yet.
Okay, and so that will go before the legislature and be determined. And do I remember correctly, are you one of the chairs of the Human Services Committee?
Yes, Human Services, uh-huh.
So this is sort of your Kuleana. Human Services would be looking at that?
Well, the Department of Health actually has the HHSC.
Okay.
I mean, the Committee on Health.
Okay, and who is the chair of that, just so I can target my energy?
Della Bilotti.
Della
Al Bilotti.
Okay, all right, thank you. I will look for her because that's it's always good to go right to the source. What advice would you give to the community? I think there are a lot of people who are affected by this that are listening right now. Is there anything you would like to share with that community?
Well, I just like to say that there's a lot of stories running around about the closure of the hospital and the legislature not funding, properly funding the system. And I think at this point, I'd just like everyone to calm down because we're still in session. We still haven't finalized the budget. And this new infusion of money coming from the governor, you know, it does definitely help all the systems. But we have to remember that the Oahu long-term care hospitals have taken a big hit, too, in that, you know, they had to cut beds. And so these funds will help them get back on track. It will definitely help the rest of the system, not counting Maui now, because Maui will be out of the picture this time because they are going to be part of Kaiser. Right? So I just want to ask everybody to kind of calm down. They can contact me directly if they have any concerns or questions.
So that would be Rep. Morikawa at capital.hawaii.gov.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Right.
And Dr. Fukino, do you have any thoughts?
I heard you say that the Maui's not in the system. So, but I understand that they're going to get some they need some transitional monies. So that money's going to come up in a separate earmarked.
That's part of that request that the governor just came down with, the $21 million. Part of that is going to go for the Maui employees. I guess they have to pay off employees,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that part of that is for that Maui transition that they're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so thank you. Do you have any other thing that, since you're on the phone with Kauai, a lot of people driving around listening to you, is there anything that you would like to ask of the people?
Well, I do have the same concerns as a lot of people as far as service cuts and not being able to deliver certain services at a hospital that we were used to in the past. But we have to remember when we were short in funding, there were some services that had to go. I mean, if you lose the doctor, you're going to lose that service line. And so in order to grow that back, administration has to look at a way that they can attract doctors back to the system if they have the funding for it. But we have to be careful not to duplicate too much with Wilcox, because, you know, this is where I think we should share. We shouldn't be competing against each other because it's such a small island.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can share good service, I think we're better off. Even with Kaiser coming on island now, you know, we have to really watch and try not to compete so much.
Well, let me say something about Kaiser. You know, we've heard, this is Nani Fukino, and we've heard that Kaiser is building a hospital. But what I know is, as for Kaiser, they have a business plan, and their business plan was to set up a clinic so they can protect their members that have Kaiser plan. The only hospital that serves Kaiser patients is KVMH right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really a business decision, I believe, they've used to set up that clinic, because the issue that sparked that started on Maui when they were having the who's going to take over Maui, if it's HPH, Kaiser, or Queens, or whatever. So they got a little bit concerned about the situation because they had a clinic that was right next door to Maui Memorial. So they felt, I believe, as business, I'm in a business myself, and as a business person, if you get that first inkling that something's going to happen, it's going to affect you, then you have to start planning to put something in place on other islands. So as for Kaiser, I think that was the situation. Another thing I just wanted to address was, when we set out to start this rally, it was not meant to say that it was closing or shut down. What we did say, by sheer neglect of the legislature, we will close down and we will decrease in services. That's what was shared. And people take things the way they want to take things because it's not really clear. And when I went down in April to talk to, well, I was in Honolulu for the Kupuna Power with Senator Brickwood Galateria. After I did that for my business partners, I went up to see Derek. It had already been decided that no funding was going to come to KVMH as of last year, and then we didn't receive the biennium. And there was cuts being made, which was $3 million. And, you know, for us, $3 million is a lot for the neighbor island, for KVMH, because we've heard that it costs $7 million for operational budget.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Nani Fukino and Representative D. Morikawa.
So we just wanted the community to be aware. And we also told the community that this is the time that they need to empower themselves to call the legislature to participate in. Their voice matters. Their vote counts this year. So that was a way for us to make the community aware and get them involved. Because normally when you pull a big project like this, an event, you start off with a big group and then eventually they trickle down and you only have 4 committed people or 5 committed people that really want to see this through. But I think the intent for us was just to make the community aware and how they can help in seeing this process through. So, you know, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your mana'o, because it's important so that others can hear what is actually going on.
Sure. But, you know, Nani, thank you so much for advocating for this. But, you know, when you say things like sheer neglect of legislature, that puts me in a spot, because I am your representative. And I am doing my best to make sure that our interests are protected, which is why I brought the finance committee down to visit our hospitals just this last summer. And they saw the good things that the hospitals do for Kauai, and they truly appreciate what our hospitals can provide. And that is why we were able to get that $10 million a couple years ago, and that's why we can work to try to see how we can better KVMH and Mahilona. So that's why I want to assure people that as your representative, that is my job. And so let me do it. because right now, you know, we have two hospitals on Kauai with the smallest population in the state. So it's really tough for me to advocate for them, but I do my best.
Well,
and
I think
that much I can assure all of you.
You know, Dee, I know kind of like people will say, well, Maui only has one. How come you don't have two? Well, actually, Maui probably ought to have a hospital in Kaanapali because that place is like Waianae. When it gets cut off with an accident, they're done. And we all know what happens when we've got accidents in our single roads. So there are ways to efficiently do that. And I think I really truly believe we are the best deal that the state has as far as for taxpayer dollars and our ability to return dollars. And we are the lifeboats for Oahu. Because I've told people, when you flush your toilet in Oahu, in Honolulu, from Kaimuki all the way down to Moanalua, it all goes to Sand Island. If there's a big problem there, I don't care how fancy the hospitals are, you ain't got them. So I think the monopoly, I think competition here has given us two CTs on this island. So when one goes down, we got the other.
As a CT scanner, something to look at your body?
Yes, okay. And that's the reason why we have that redundancy here. So I think it's important for the neighbor islands to have robust medical systems. But that's a different. That's my opinion. It's a different difference of opinion between where I've been and where Wilcox physicians have been.
And Representative Dee, I'm not interpreting this as an attack on the job that you're doing. I am so pleased that you're calling in, and the way I see it is this is a rallying call, a kaheia, to get people to help you do an excellent job, not because you won't try without it, but the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So I think what I'm hearing these folks be saying is that, hey, let's support our representative. Let's help her get her message across, because if everybody stay quiet, then, you know, they're not going to, the rest of your colleagues won't understand that there is a need over here. And what Wayne Fukino just had made a comment on that I think is very important is what happens when the roads shut down. Later in this show, I think we're going to get a call from the wanting to come in urgent care center for the North Shore. I know that that is controversial also, but we do have the roads break. And I think you remember one time we had the roads break seven places between Ke'e and Kapa'a. Mm-hmm. And even just a car accident, one of my friends, she had to walk from the top at Anini Vistas over to Kilauea when she was delivering her baby. The baby was born in Kilauea because there was a car accident on the bridge. So she couldn't even get across. So it's not about you not doing an excellent job. I want to really thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you. It's about how can we help you.
Yeah, that's the other thing is you told us, I know you guys are just outnumbered, okay? And that's why we're going to ask the questions that you might not be able to prod people with in the legislature. And so we're here to give you that support. And you can just tell them, those crazy people on my island, they're nuts and they're upset. And I didn't tell them to do this.
No,
because
not.
You
they're
did.
Just passionate.
No,
people.
But you know what I mean. I said, we're passionate, but you can just, you know, because we did this all without telling you, really. And that gives you, I guess, plausible deniability.
Yeah. And it's a Kako thing. I mean, the North Shore, the East Side, the West Side, South Side, we're all in this together. And we're all trying to help each other. And you rock, Dee.
Oh, thank you for that. But, you know, I'm here for the people.
We do. Is there anything we can do for you? Do you have a bill that you need help on?
Actually, no. I think my bills are moving through pretty well.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
And if I did, I would reach out to you.
Okay. Please do. And I appreciate the times that you have come in the studio, and know that KKCR always has a door open to you and any of our policymakers that need to reach to the public, because this is on the community radio station. This is a place where we can robustly make a discussion on these topics.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. I want to take a moment to applaud a few things that are working well. One, in the emergency services, we had a fire in my neighborhood, so of course I'm going to notice that. I got up at the crack of dawn, and the neighborhood across the street from me is R6, which means six houses per acre, so it's a tight neighborhood. And one of our families, their house caught fire. We're all really glad that everybody survived. The grandfather got the young child out. Everybody was good. But the fire department came, and these flames were double the size of the house. And Hanalei Station put that fire out very quickly. The Lihue Station actually came up with their yellow truck, which is for spraying foam on top of rooftops. Now, the fire was out before they got there, so they didn't need to do it. But we had, I can't remember what they call themselves at Kealia, but the Kealia Station is just south of Kealia. They were up there, too, but they did an excellent job. They were quiet. But it was definitely a demonstration of competence, and I appreciate them. And a little bit, I think that we, at some point in this show, we might be hearing from the firemen and the CERT program, which is Community Emergency Response Team. If we don't hear from them, Marshall will be able to fill us in a little bit on what they do. And I want to show some gratitude for a few of these bills that we have discussed on this show. And there's been success. You know, it's always really important to count success. Now, as a hospital person, you might not be in agreement with this, but a lot of people were not happy about those mandatory vaccines. So having vaccines is good, but mandatory vaccines, that feels a little frightening. Nobody likes to be forced what to do, and seems a little fascist. There can be arguments for it, but it takes an awful lot of trust, more trust than most people have. So six of the seven have halted. And then there was also land that was set up to be given to the military, which was an outcome of Kanaka, really Hawaiian people, calling the military out at Pohakaloa for trashing the place with their tests, their military testing, and putting depleted uranium in the area. And so they had an unusual lawsuit, and it was Ku Ching and Deborah Ward. They did a very good job. They said, hey, the Department of Land and Natural Resources is not being good stewards of the land by managing their tenant. And the Hawaii court said, you know what, you're right. And so then immediately there was legislation to upturn that, but yay, the legislature said no. Hawaii still ultimately holds that land. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, wonderful program, and I'm glad you mentioned CERT. My name is Joe. I've been with CERT since day one.
Okay.
And the fire department, they're doing a very good job of trying to recruit people. And coming up, I think this one of these weekends, or maybe I hope it's not over with, they're having a tryout for CERT, which is a little program they have devised. They're going to do it up at Princeville, Sunset House. But also, for the immediate local area, the Kilauea area, CERT has not been meeting, and the leadership has not been so good, but, we do have a new person who has stepped up, and, not anybody should call him about this. He'll let it know.
Is this Alan Parakini?
Huh?
Are you talking about Alan Parakini? I'll call him out right now. He's doing it.
I know he's doing it, but also Tom Pickett is going to help sponsoring it.
Oh, wonderful. He's with the bakery.
Yeah, he's going to help get a little movement into the CERT program in Kilauea.
So people
now,
let me give a little bit of...
We have no date exactly when that's going to happen, and I'd advise people not to call Tom. Tom will let it be known publicly when it will happen.
Okay, I'm going to give some dates because I happen to know.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here. In Princeville at Sunset Drive Clubhouse, the first event will be February 24th. That's a Wednesday from 5:30 to 9:30. There
Wonderful.
Will be six consecutive weeks for learning that, for the 4 hours each week. And I think people come away with a lot. A little later in the show, we'll talk more about it. For Kilauea, It's going to be in the Kilauea Neighborhood Center, same time, 5:30 to 9:30. That's March 15th. Then
for six consecutive
weeks, and at the fire headquarters in Lihue.
The first
date will be March 28th, also 5:30 to 9:30, and it will be six consecutive weeks. And if people want more information, they could call John Cornell at 645-0661, or they could go to kauai.gov/CERT, which means Community Emergency Response Team. So thank you for calling in on that.
Hey, well, thank you for broadcasting it, and I urge people to... It's a simple program, and it's something that's wonderful to have on hand, and when things happen that you need it, you can guide your family and your neighbors through things.
Perfect.
You could be the guy on the block that will be able to know what to do when to do it.
That's right. The goal is for as many people to know it as possible.
Exactly. And we have at least one or two people per block. Hey, you got a good area covered.
So thank you, Joe.
Yeah, have a good day.
Okay.
Aloha to everybody.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Felisa. This is Cynthia Keener calling in.
Hi, Cynthia.
How are you?
Good.
I appreciate what you're doing and giving the community a voice on many subjects. But you just hit home with me in regards to that mandated vaccine. There's, like, I think seven bills that they're trying to push through the legislature.
So six have kind of hit the parking brake.
Yeah, they're at a stall, but I don't know. I don't trust anybody.
Okay.
They're at a stall for now.
Can you put your phone real close, not muffle on the phone, and then we want to hear
what
you...
Can you hear me okay now?
A little bit better, yes.
That better?
Yes.
Okay. So, number one, I just want to say I appreciate what you're doing, letting us get a voice on the air. And number two, on the emergency side of, you know, the hospitals, I've been listening in a little bit. You know, it's pretty imperative that we need to have these emergency, you know, like about the North Shore, we definitely need to have, something for the people to get to when they need, you know, immediate care. It's a matter of, like, life or death. Which goes in to my story a little bit, back to the mandated vaccine and Wilcox Emergency Room and how they helped my son. My son is 6-year-old now. He was vaccine damaged at 1 year of age.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's been a crazy almost 6 years. He was vaccine damaged at his 1 year vaccination, when we went into his appointment. He had the MMR, chickenpox, and the Hib.
Hib.
If I only knew back then, Hib, yeah. If I only knew back then what I know now. 2 days later, he started having these jerking seizures. It took me 2 months of going back and forth to the Wilcox Clinic with several pediatricians, and they were telling me, you know, are you sure he's not having tantrums, all this kind of stuff like that. And I was like, no, you know, I worked in pediatrics. I worked in neonatal for 10 years. I know what a seizure looks like. Something was definitely going on with my baby. I was going around in circles, and they were just telling me that was a coincidence. So we'll speed it up here. Five, almost 6 years later, and it says it on the CDC website, and anybody could access the CDC website, cdc.gov.
Which means Center for Disease Control.
Center for Disease Control, which, you know, they do all the statistics of everything. And, man, is there a lot of information on there. What's happening when we're taking our children to go get our vaccinations is we are not getting a fully informed consent. We are only getting the tip of the iceberg. I urge anybody of, infants, toddlers, teenagers, even for adults, go to the website and know what you're putting in your body. Well, I've been to 3 major hospitals in the mainland. I've fired a bunch of doctors here. I've gone through 3 pediatric neurologists here, and I knew what I needed all along for my son to kind of diagnose these mystery seizures that were definitely not tantrums.
So is it long-term damage that your son has?
Yes, my son has long-term brain damage, and unfortunately it's the MMR where you'll see on the CDC website that there's jerking seizures as a severe a severe reaction to the MMR.
Measles, now, mumps, and rubella.
Measles, mumps, and rubella. There's no reason, medical reason, let me rephrase that, that your children need to be getting all these shots at one time. But unfortunately, the pharmaceutical companies that make these vaccines, they've put them all together and they refuse to separate them. They've been having problems with the MMR since 1976. I have literally dedicated my life. My life is pretty much my son now. You would see him and he's pretty much seems like he's normal, but he's definitely not. He's been in special education for 3 years, going on 4. He cannot go into a regular, general ed classroom because of the damage. But what is so sad, they want to mandate these vaccines and it's, they won't change them, the formulation, and they know the government is fully, fully aware that there is injury and death, happening. And I spent, a couple nights going through 6 years of injury and death report from the vaccine injury court. It's everything's on the internet. You could find this stuff very easily.
Right, and there's something called VARS. I think that means vaccine.
VARS. It's called VARS.
VARS.
It's a vaccine compensation program. And so basically, first off, you have to find a doctor that will say, yes, this is a reaction from this MMR or chickenpox or whatever. What's big right now, Gardasil and the pertussis. There's a pertussis thing going around. But first off, you have to find the physician that will admit that, yes, there are side effects, okay? Number two, it's like riding on a hamster wheel to go to the vaccine injury court to be compensated. And a known fact that all the injury and death cases that are being compensated, that is only a third of actually what's really being reported. Now, I found out from another physician after I left Wilcox that that hospital, the pediatricians didn't even turn in my, they didn't even, they're supposed to report to VAERS, vaccine adverse reaction, and they didn't even report it. So here we are, 5 years later. He has all these therapists. Like I said, we've gone to 3 major hospitals. For my son, they all assumed that he was epileptic because he started having seizures. Well, kids don't start at 1 year of age with epilepsy, number one. It's typically between ages four and 9 years of age. Had they done the proper testing on my son, which would have been a genetic screening, and then they would have seen, that there would have been an epilepsy, I literally just got that done when I finally got to a really good physician over at the UCSF Benioff Children's Center, the brain center. And she was kind of flabbergasted with what had gone on, in the state of Hawaii, what had gone on. And basically she took Makana off all medications and she said to me, well, she really wouldn't admit that, she did talk to me about this, about the vaccine damage, but she focused on more how Makana had brain damage on the assumption of that he was epileptic because he had AEDs, that's anti-epileptic drugs. When in all actuality, when I've done research and I have scholarly articles written by neurologists, extensive supporting evidence. And like I said, it's even there on the CDC website, severe jerking seizures. But nobody knows about these horrible things until it hits home. It happens to you or it happens to someone in your circle or a friend of a friend. And it's very, very, very real.
Have you had any support from our legislatures? Have you called any of them?
I'm now getting all the, when the hearings are coming up. I would love to go. My husband and I both are ready to jump on a plane to go before the Senate. I'm trying to work with Derek Kawakami's office to get help on this. And he's very accommodating. He's really good. The secretary in his office, Polly, she's been amazing. She's helped me on different levels. But, I definitely, in speaking with, Kauai is a very small place, and I've lived here for almost 20 years. And the more I share my story with people, because I'm justified and I'm validated because it's a mystery, his mystery seizures. And I say, it's only in the medical world is it a mystery with certain people that I've come across, okay? It's a mystery, but it's really not. All the pieces of the puzzle are there. It stems from the MMR. And on YouTube, there's a video of a girl named Emily Moeller. she has the same exact symptoms, and I believe she won her case in court. They actually got a lawyer, and she won in the vaccine injury court. Now, she was 13 when she finally got awarded, and her stuff happened to her. Her reaction to the vaccine happened to her when she was younger as well.
Yes, and can I slow you down for just a minute? I really care about what you're sharing, and I know nothing could be closer to your heart. I happen to have an emergency room doctor in the house. He might have better Manao than me. Do you have any feedback on this, Dr. Fukino?
Not about this topic.
Do you see vaccine injury in your emergency room?
I've seen fevers, but I haven't seen what she's talking about.
You know, I know on this show we have covered a lot of seizing with kids, babies, mm-hmm. and brain hemorrhages, and so. In your area, I will be honest, a lot of times people feel that it is exposure to pesticides. And so when I'm listening to Cynthia here talk about what her son went through, it also sounds like sometimes what people feel like, I hear the same symptom from pesticide exposure, though in your case, you had the shots and then right after that happened. And so I think a lot of parents don't know what's going on.
Right.
But brain hemorrhages, I've had like three different parents in the studio here talking about that, and they live like at Pecala's or right there in Waimea. So it's hard to know, but I appreciate what you're saying. And so if I can encapsulate your message,
sure.
It sounds to me like what you're sharing with the listener is take this very seriously, be highly informed. You're not necessarily saying don't vaccinate, but you're saying don't be trusting of the fact that they simply say, hey, it's all good. If it was all good, there wouldn't be a need for vaccine court. There wouldn't be a need for VARs. I understand that vaccine court is there because they want to protect the companies making the vaccines against damages, otherwise nobody would take such a high-risk business. But when they pretend like, hey, it's not high-risk, it is high-risk. That's why it's got a special court. Mm-hmm. So let's just be straight with the truth. So I'm very sorry that you have had this challenge. Do you have a final thought?
Well, my final thought is, and this is deep, and this is from the heart, on the day that I went in, I had sort of been apprehensive, and I call that an instinctual mother feeling, you know? and I sort of didn't want him to have all these thoughts all together, you know? But in closing, I don't feel like anything should be mandated or any kind of, I don't want to say injectable, but that's pretty much what it is. I don't think anybody should be forced to put anything in their own body. And as parents, nobody cares more about my child than I do, maybe except for God, you know, and I don't want anybody telling me what to do with my own child.
So
I
respect
that. Or mandating that I have to put this inside my child. I don't think that's proper.
And the
simple thing is, Kalisha, is this is a really easy analogy. Alcohol affects adults, hopefully, you know. Alcohol affects everybody differently, you know. And when you're putting vaccines, all babies and children, we are all so genetically, I mean, there's only one, our DNA, there's only one of us. And how could they create one vaccine for all? It's not everyone's going to take well to it, like my son, you know? And I just don't think it should be mandated. I think it's a civil and human right. That we have to stand up again.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay. I need to say, you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Before you go, Cynthia, but we're going to hear from our sponsors soon. Nana, you were nodding your head, or you were responding. Do you have anything to say on this? Or
no, I just, as a parent, you know, I can sense what she's feeling. You know, that being just stuck and not being able to get somebody to support and help her. You know, it's hard because I'm also a grandparent. I have grandchildren that have had their vaccine. They didn't have the same symptoms as her child, but I can sense her pain. Yeah.
Yeah, and we honor and respect your message.
Yes. Thank you so much, Felicia. I appreciate it. Aloha.
Aloha. So you are listening to Kauai Soapbox, and it is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. You know, when I'm listening to her story, it sounds like in her case, she saw a very clear connection between what happened. And I know when any time we lose somebody we love or lose their capacity, it is always very, very difficult. And I know for myself and our Kilauea community, we lost an angel this week. I really want to give an honoring to Margot Lateef, who is 20 years old, who passed away. I'm not sure why. I don't know that anybody yet knows. Her parents are Mike and Sherry Lateef from the North Shore Pharmacy. And I just, you know, I love this girl, and she is positive, upbeat, talented, you know, just an absolute gem and gift from God. And she hasn't been feeling well pretty much since she started college. And I know it could be a whole lot of reasons. And my kids, she's good friends with both of my sons and lives down the street from me. And, you know, we're all in shock over this. But I immediately think, you know, I hope it was nothing from these vaccines, because they forced the kids to take these vaccines when they go to college, and some of those vaccines have the type of degradation that she went through. But in her case, her parents are pharmacists, so if anybody would be able to know and be on top of that. So I don't want to be putting something in there. I just was tying it when you just have, like, you don't know why, and I don't understand why Margot had to leave us. I'm sure that her spirit and her soul is fine. Her parents, they did say that they are overwhelmed with all the love, support, prayers, and good wishes outpouring from all of her and their friends. And they really appreciate that everyone understands that they're having a private ceremony for her at this moment. This is a second unexpected tragic loss in our community. And in both cases, it has been so sudden and so devastating that the family hasn't really been able to just open up and have a big service. But we were blessed on a daily basis to have Margot in our life, and I know she's loved by many, many people. So, and even then, this happened when she was away at college. She was in her dorm room by herself when it happened. There's no sense of foul play. So, you know, I have to just, at a spiritual level, I feel like it's in God's hands, and, you know, we never know when it's the time to be released. But love her and wishing her well. When we're thinking about the North Shore, because I had mentioned this a few minutes back about like somebody needing to walk over the bridge who was in labor. And we have different challenges, and sometimes people don't make it to the hospital. There has been an urgent care facility that has been wanting to, or is in the formulation of opening up. And I'm hoping that they might be able to call in. I had suggested that maybe they do that, because it would be interesting to hear from them of what their plan is. You know, we don't have perhaps a North Shore emergency service at this point because of the cost of it, but it certainly would be very good. I know that what they were looking at was having it be a 24/7 basically doctor's office that had a lot of the different test facilities. So we don't have a lot of ambulances that come through. So sometimes everything happens at once, and then it's tough. And so there are people who pass away before they do make it all the way to Lihue. And then can we afford a second medical clinic, I mean serious medical clinic that's up here? So I believe I have a call. Maybe it's even him. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
And so there are people who pass away.
Hi, this is Dr. Kimball.
Hi, Dr. Kimball. Can you turn your radio off?
Yes.
Okay, so you were hearing me. Yay. You are part of this proposed urgent care facility on the North Shore. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, probably give you a little bit of history. I've been coming with my family to the North Shore for about 35 years. My dad had business over there when I was a young boy, and over the years of us being there, we have many friends on the North Shore, and as I got into medicine, particularly emergency medicine, like Dr. Facchino, we had discussions about some of the barriers to emergency, particularly emergency and urgent care for residents on the North Shore and visitors, and initiated a plan to do a very thorough due diligence as to the possibility of starting an urgent care operation there. And spent about 2.5 years collecting data and looking at the feasibility of that using the small business development offices to help us with that. And most of the information and data that we collected showed that there not only was a need, but that it would be financially feasible. So we began having community meetings to assess that particular route with the community, and have found a great deal of support there as well. We were, of course, very aware of the fragility of medical care on the island as a whole that you've been talking with Dr. Facchino about and others, and wanted to be very careful as we forayed into this. That's why we've taken the time to do the feasibility studies and to talk with stakeholders throughout the island, and we have arrived at the point where we think we have that support, we have that need, and we're going ahead.
So this would be basically like a doctor's office that's open 24/7 between Foodland and the Kolopua Apartments, the new affordable housing in Princeville. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, it'd be directly behind the fire station, the Princeville fire station.
Oh.
So, yeah, you're...
Okay. So you're just almost right next to KKCR.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so, and I went to the Planning Commission meeting, and it would have some residential units on top, and that's so that the people who would be the medical facilitators would be sleeping above the medical station?
Yeah, so we have, we don't, you know, there's some things that we can anticipate in great detail. Other things we're not sure as those who work in emergency medicine. What your census will be that day, that week, or that month is sometimes hard to predict.
You're getting
some
nods.
Probably,
They're nodding. They're nodding. You know, they're smiling and nodding. There's Dr. Fukino and Nani.
Yeah, as Dr. Fukino knows, only a full moon predicts how many patients you're going to see that night. So what we will do is over an initial six-month period, we'll determine really when the staffing will need to be heavy and when it will be light. We are proposing no more than a single individual emergency physician to be there at any one time. We don't think we will need more than that initially. The ability to be open 24/7 has been something that the community has come back in our three community meetings that we've had very loudly with that need because of the emergencies that are occurring and urgencies that are occurring at a quite regular basis where people have to load in a private car often and drive some distance to get help. And as was discussed earlier in the show, the ambulance support on the island is a little thin, and particularly on the north side, if an ambulance departs with an injured or ill patient to take them to Lihue, there can be a long gap between that ambulance returning back, and there have been numerous incidences. The population and visitor rate grows where that ambulance has been en route and another emergency occurs on the North Shore, and that is leaving a difficult gap for the residents and visitors to the North Shore.
So what equipment would you have in this place? Would you be able to do minor surgery? Would you have like a CT scanner or an X-ray machine? Is it basically like just having a doctor's office that is essentially open 24/7, which would probably take care of a number of challenges? Or is it, when I think urgent care, I think a little bit deeper aspect of
that? Yeah, good question. what we've really done is tried to take these many months of assessment and meet the needs that we feel the community has as best we can.
So what are those needs?
As Dr. Fukino can tell you, there are emergencies. If you get in a car accident in a rural area or a critical access area, or you have a bad infection, you don't get a rural infection or you don't have a rural accident. You're just as severely injured as if you were in a big city near a big level one trauma center. And so one of the difficulties that we've tried to navigate is we initially thought we would set out to establish a freestanding emergency room, and those are becoming more and more popular through the United States. There's one that's being built over on the Big Island right now. And that's a center that has typically a CT scanner and the ability to manage most emergencies, even though it's not directly connected physically to a hospital. We ran into some concerns about going that big initially with the state trauma committee, with the hospitals that we talked to on island, particularly Wilcox. And there's also a fair amount of regulation that's required to designate yourself as an emergency department or an emergency room. And so taking those things into consideration, we have established ourselves as an urgent care. And as you remember from the county hearings, we used the term a very robust urgent care in the sense that we will be staffing with board-certified emergency physicians that spend a good deal of the rest of their year working in a level one trauma center. So they're very experienced in managing airways, emergencies of many kinds. But having that ability and having that equipment on the North Shore will help us to stabilize patients, but we need to work very closely with the whole system, not only on Kauai, but the transfer system over to Oahu, knowing that we will not be providing definitive care for strokes, heart attacks, or major trauma.
So do you have...
Having said that...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'll end by saying, having said that, major incidences like strokes, heart attacks, and traumas are showing up actually as walking wounded into the fire department, even as we speak on the North Shore. And so we anticipate that those kind of problems will show up, even though we will not be an ambulance destination in the sense of an emergency department. And we will not encourage ambulances to stop en route to transporting patients to more definitive care, say down at Luhuli or at Wilcox or Mahilona.
But it might be if somebody was in somewhat of a crisis, they could take them there to your place, and if needed, a call to the ambulance, if it seems, would be further.
Yeah, exactly, Felicia. We would have some, you know, people will walk in with chest pressure that could be anything from a cold or a pneumonia to an actual heart attack going on. And rather than say, no, we're in urgent care, we can't help you, we'd be able to both initiate diagnostic testing, and when the physician felt like this was something of that severity, we would immediately initiate a call to an ambulance to be able to move that patient as fast as possible to definitive care. But in the meantime, should that ambulance be sitting in the Lahui emergency department bay, having transported somebody else, it may be an hour or two before that help could come in the form of an ambulance, and we would be prepared to help stabilize that patient in the meantime.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. On the phone with me is Dr. Ted Kimball. And so you live in Salt Lake City, correct?
I do. Uh-huh.
And so,
director.
Go ahead.
Of the surgical intensive care unit at the University of Utah, and I'm trained in both emergency medicine and critical care.
And so, the people who would be coming over and being this high trauma center emergency staff, they are people from Utah as well. Like, why would people come over and do it? I've heard of the traveling nurses corps. Why would doctors come over and do it?
Good question. We will have several physicians that are locals on island that will be helping support us in this coverage, but we will have a significant number of physicians that will rotate over. And this is a not unheard of paradigm. It's done in a number of locations throughout the United States where physicians work as a locums tenens type approach. These physicians would come and have the opportunity to work for a period of time and have several days off and have their families with them. It's obviously a beautiful destination for these folks to bring their families. But our focus really will be to provide good emergency and urgent care to the North Shore. And
thank you. And we have two people in the studio here who have something to say to you.
Okay.
This is Dr. Fukino.
Yeah, Ted, I understand what you're talking about. And actually, the way they'll come over, well, this is a great place to visit. But we've had travelers come through the ER department. And they're really good, and they do their job and work. But you can also bring your family here. And you can be there working while you're with your family. And so, you know, you're not going to work 24/7 for a whole week.
Right.
You know, and then one of the things in medicine right now is there's so many things that we can actually do, but there's a time limit on them. Like if you're coming in with chest pain, and do you give the TPA or not? And if you have to do that, you've got to do that within a certain window.
TPA? What's a TPA?
That's thrombolytic therapy or clot busting for heart attacks. And one of the things is you've got to do it optimally within a certain window of time, and that time is 30 minutes to an hour from when you see it. And that you don't have that here. It's like people tell us we got the golden hour, which is when you have trauma, you got to do it within an hour. But there is no such thing as a golden hour on West Side, least if I don't have a surgical coverage there. I mean, it's 2 hours to ship to Honolulu, at least.
Yeah.
So, Ted, one of the things we had thought about with, early on, maybe like 10, 15 years ago, was with the state trying to improve accessibility as its goal. We wanted to stabilize Westside, KVMH, develop San Mahielono. And one of the things we always knew was we needed to have something out here on the North Shore. And to that end, we even talked about potential for a freestanding emergency room. Because I know, last week there was a critical case, a CPR case, and all three ambulances were down at the airport transferring critical patients, and so that patient had to wait for an ambulance from Kailua to come from Poipu to come all the way here to go pick him up. I don't know how that turned out. But that's what, you know, you face here. Rural areas, so that's where the state comes in. And it doesn't have to cost an exorbitant amount of money. I think you can figure out a way to actually make some money, defer the cost to the region, and then actually develop that robust medical system that we should have on this island.
Doctor, this is Marshall. Thank you for the work you're doing. Is this a facility that would treat people regardless of their level of insurance or ability to pay?
Oh, absolutely. Again, we spent a lot of time speaking with the community and have gone back time and time again to the drawing board to make sure that we are inclusive of all of the residents on the North Shore. And we are obtaining some funding from the USDA Rural Development Loan Fund. And in order for us to receive that funding, we have to absolutely accept all patients, regardless of their ability to pay. And in fact, we're even taking it a step further. We are establishing a five-component outreach program, and one of those components, I'm probably glad to tell you a little bit about the other four, but one of those components will be a fund that will help subsidize low-income and non-insured patients who need medical help in the North Shore area.
And how do you see that you may or may not impact the existing medical establishment that's up on the North Shore, just basically the regular doctors?
Yeah, no, that's been a very delicate topic for us. We first and foremost want to acknowledge and recognize the many years of work that have been done by those who have cared for patients, particularly the primary care physicians in Kilauea, and appreciate their concerns. They do a great job. They take care of many patients with many issues, and in many cases, they do a fair amount of urgent care as well during their office hours. They do their very best to squeeze people in. It's a tough thing to have a large number of walk-ins in mixing in with scheduled patients, and I know they do their very best to do that. Our long-term assessment from the community, however, has been that that the growing need for the growing population has created a need in which after-hours emergency and urgent care is increasing. And even during the day, the ability to come in with many issues and be treated in those primary care offices is just not feasible and or reasonable. And so a good portion of the population just simply bypasses those offices and heads down to the west side.
And we have a lot of visitors at any particular time, and so I think that is part of what would probably pick up a bunch of your clientele, because they don't already have a doctor that they go to. Have you spoken with the company that owns Princeville? I know that they're trying to market this land for millions of dollars. I mean, it's, you know, the lowest cost of what had been up there in what's called the Hanalei Club. I think they've taken a little bit of a marketing break, but it was about $3 million for a duplex. So I would think, like, if I'm just giving you a business strategy, if I was doing what you were doing, I would talk to them and say, hey, you know, can we use your airport for heliporting people out of here? Because then that would probably be a really big thing, and it might increase their sales, because people don't want to go someplace where if they have a problem, they can't get out. I mean, I'm just trying to think of how do you bring in business. This is my... I used to be the head of the North Shore Business Council. This is my, how do you make economic development out of this that works? We have all of these health and wellness practitioners up here. Maybe they can send people in for a Xerox and a blood test to look at what's healthy or not healthy. And a lot of people could come over here and, in fact, do come over here. We have people who come here to essentially detox from a difficult, stressful life and to make better health habits. Maybe that's something that can flow into this. I know this isn't really a completely done deal, right? I mean, this is under consideration, but it's not all the way happening.
I'll try to answer several of those questions in a row.
Yeah, my marketing pitch to you, like, oh, how can you make it work? Okay.
Yeah. So the answer to the first question is, yeah, we have made an effort to reach out to the owners of Prince Phil, and I think we certainly found that we are no more special than any of the other many people who have tried to reach out.
Oh, that's too bad.
To them, as you're insinuating, we've received basically the same answer, which has been no answer. We did get approached, however, by the folks that are planning the Hanalei Club, and they actually proposed some things to us that would have deviated dramatically from our focus, which is the community, and wanted us to direct our efforts a little more on them, and we rejected that offer. And as you have insinuated, it sounds like they may not be actually coming to fruition, or like you've said, they've taken a break from marketing. So I'm not sure exactly where that's going, but we really have been community focused, and we're not interested in taking care of a particular socioeconomic group that's way up there and can pay a lot of money, even though that might be enticing. It's not where we're coming from.
Okay. Sometimes
I've been working in humanitarian work for over 15 years, and I have a much greater love for that type of work than I do for.
Well, I respect that. And, I mean, everybody's human, and I would say everybody from the county real property tax division to the local retailer actually leans on both markets, you know, serving the local people and also serving the visitors who come here.
Yeah, and that's where we're focused as well. Your question about the
health and wellness, because I'm just trying to look at, like, if you help that market too, that might actually, a lot of people here are into alternative health care,
sure,
you know, or traditional medicine, which is mm-hmm. plants and more holistic health, and so that's a big demand on the North Shore. I'm not sure how big it is on the West Side, but it is very big up on this side, so that might be. I don't know if that's divergent from your vision, but that's something that people are interested in, and now HMSA is starting to cover holistic health.
Yeah, I think you're enumerating a lot of needs and a lot of opportunities. We're going to try to start out fairly focused on providing that emergency and urgent care that we can with the scope of the facility that we have. We have been approached by and just to answer your final question, no, this is no longer a concept. We have a building permit pending any day now, and we should be breaking ground fairly soon. So this is going forward, and we have been approached by several of the North Shore residents who have been very encouraging and very generous in their support for our clinic. To move towards in the future having potentially an aeromedical evacuation capability. We plan on building a portion of the clinic, which will be a multi-purpose room that we will allow the community to use regularly. We'll be teaching out of that much of the curriculum for the fire department and lifeguards. We're bringing in several physicians that actually write the textbooks nationally for EMS, and we'll be offering that opportunity. We'll also be providing shadowing opportunities for the Kauai Community College nursing program, and also shadowing opportunities for high school kids on the North Shore that have an interest in healthcare, and providing several scholarships a year to those kids as well. And all of this, again, under the umbrella of a nonprofit organization, and that teaching will all be for free. And so some of these other areas that you're branching out into, I think we would open up our multi-purpose area in the clinic for those kinds of opportunities to teach, bring in lectures. I don't know that we would have the scope to be able to provide that care per se, again, we hope to grow with the community anything, you know, the sky may be the limit there.
Well, thank you. That you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. I have Dr. Ted Kimball on the phone talking about the North Shore Urgent Care that is coming up. I have Dr. Fukino in the studio with me. He has one final question for you, and then I'm going to be taking some more callers.
Yeah, Ted, I wanted to ask, the nature of the urgent care business is with the shift work, you don't get to see the same doctor every time. It's not like I'm a primary care physician. So when you have these people, say somebody from a regular community physician, you plan on referring them back like we do from the ER and get these people to somebody that can follow them for a long-term plan and get their work done.
Yeah. Yeah, Wayne, I appreciate that question. And one of the ways in which we hope to show the Kilauea physicians our sensitivity to their practices are, and Felicia was at this meeting. I don't know if you stayed clear to the end, but
I had a radio show. I had to come back from my radio show, but yes, so I know I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we actually incorporated in our zoning permit to put those two residential units up on top, even though we already had approval to build. It was just that variance. I actually intentionally incorporated a fifth, a ninth requirement, and that requirement was that we would do just what Dr. Fukino is referring to. We would refer all patients that come into us potentially after hours because they can't see their primary care doctor back to their primary care doctor, and that we would do our best to refer new patients that might need ongoing chronic care to those physicians as well, and that we would also tap into the Wilcox Epic medical record so that we can have that connection and send these patients back with information, lab results, x-ray results, back to their primary care doctors, because we believe strongly that we will not be supplanting the very important primary care that's going on out there. We also have committed in that same addition to providing access to our x-ray machine and our lab capabilities, which the Kilauea clinics don't have at this time access for their patients to come over even during their office hours and get x-rays and labs at just our bare costs.
That is huge and exciting for North Shore people, because it is an ordeal to drive all the way down to Lihue. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing. This is pretty exciting, actually.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Felicia, and it's an honor to be on with Dr. Fukino. I know of him and his many years of commitment to the healthcare world on Kauai, and I know it's a difficult and fragile time, and again, we hope to be helpful in supporting that going forward.
Mahalo. Thank you.
Thanks.
Aloha. Thank you so much for holding. You've been very patient. You're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, yeah, this is for the guys that are, you know, opening that thing up in the North Shore of the clinic. I'm an amputee, and Kauai really doesn't have options when it comes to prosthetists. I hope I said that
correctly. Prosthetics?
The guy that makes the legs and the braces, and I think he's a prosthetist.
Okay. All right.
I don't know how to say it.
But the guy who makes the legs and stuff, I get it.
But he comes every 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm an active guy, and in my history of almost 12 and a half years, almost 12 solid years of being an amputee, you know, I found myself between visits needing assistance. And most of the the even my primary doctor and at the and then when you go to orthopedics, none of them really know how to deal with the equipment. And so, you know, I'm not from the North Shore, but I would go up there, and I hope that is listening, or anybody in the medical field listening, that they could get a little bit more sensitive on dealing with wear and tear of equipment, not just bodies, because they're integrated. And I've had to do a lot of my own learning curve, but I've also had to share what I've learned with other people because, you know, they haven't figured it out or not, you know, some have and some don't, and I try to barato my knowledge. And but I can tell you right now that in between visits and even the knowledge of how to deal with my stump and stuff like that, you'd be surprised how much lacking. I mean, they don't even know the names of parts. And the way the system works is the people who make the leg cannot contact the doctor. I have to initiate it by going to my primary, and then I talk to the primary, or if I'm under an actual case, like in a sense when I broke my stump when I on my motorcycle, then I was dealing with ortho, and even they, you know, it's the same thing if it's your primary or if you're dealing with the case as in they did with orthopedics at the time, then they just charge you over back, right, when you're done. But all of them, none of them know the names of the parts. I got to go and find my own research. So I would just like to say that as they're thinking about things to do, not just alternative medicines and whatnot, like you guys pointed out, but maybe they can get a little bit better intermediate care between visits from our guy or maybe
okay.
even a competitor.
So you know what? Like, I'm going to give you his email. I bet he would really like that. I can see that he's come back on the air, but I know who's calling, and I'm going to make sure that the two of you are connected because I think that's important.
I'm at jiu-jitsu, so bye-bye. Maybe tomorrow or later on this evening.
I will, and then I want to say that, like, I know who this person is. I would never even notice that he had a prosthetic on. You are so capable of walking and moving, like, you know, you can't even tell that you are having that struggle, so you hide it well.
Well, I just push it. I run them hard is what they call it.
Okay. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. Dr. Fukino and Nani. I have a question about the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. The expectation was that the uninsured, who were a disproportionate burden on hospitals because they, one, hospitals wouldn't be paid for the care that they gave them, and two, they came to the emergency room rather than going to the primary care physician that they didn't have. And that as they got covered with Medicaid, they would, one, go to a primary care physician rather than the emergency room, and when they did go to the hospital, there would be compensation. Have you seen that at all?
I think one of the things we've seen is that the thought was there, but the reality is it hasn't panned out like they're thinking. Here in the state of Hawaii, before the Affordable Care Act, there was a nonprofit came through and they did a study on that. And I think we had something like 95% of our population was covered with some kind of insurance. And those who weren't covered because they didn't bother to fill out the paperwork. All children in the state are covered, but you've got to fill some forms out and get that done. And so, after the Affordable Care Act, I think that number of insured dropped because of the price of the insurance. So it had some unintended consequence. It was a nice idea, but it hasn't worked out like we thought. Now, but even at the ER, I never asked for the insurance. I see the patient. I mean, that's a luxury we have because we just see them. In fact, you can't even talk to them about insurance or any kind of money before you see them and do that triage and treat them.
I know, like, Marshall's heard this, but certainly for me, the Affordable Care Act pretty much stopped my going to the doctor because the deductible, you know, is too high. So The good thing is I'm healthier. So, I mean, I don't go anymore, even though I pay double the amount.
Are you saying that we have fewer people with health care insurance of any kind after the Affordable Care Act than we did before?
That is my impression. Now, if you ask me, do I know the numbers for certain, I cannot confirm that. But my impression is that's the case. However, like in the state hospitals system, we have you need to apply for Medicaid, and after you do, if you get a denial, you bring the letter, and then we can, lower the costs. And indeed, we have some patients who are paying $5 a month for their care. That's just the way the state can do it. The states can do it. It's about accessibility. Okay, so we do need a backstop from the state for that. That's my impression, that we're getting less coverage. People are coming to use the ER more.
So, well, thank you for that. Jazz with John is coming up next. He's in the house. He always does a great job. We might have another caller in here. While we have this moment, I want to let people know that tomorrow night, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative is having their candidate forum. They ask people to arrive by 5:30 at Chiefest Kamakahele. I will be there, and KKCR is going to be broadcasting them live. You will hear it anywhere. We're always happy to provide a service like that. I believe that it'll probably really start at 6, but whenever they do start, we'll begin to broadcast it. I want to make a comment about an interesting situation that happened. I saw today a person called into the emergency service to get airlifted out of Kalalau. It turns out there is nothing wrong with her. Did you guys see that?
No.
No.
Yeah, so that was really kind of a bummer. You know, it's a lot to get people to fly in there with the helicopter, pick her up, 47-year-old person from Texas who was just don't feel like walking out, but, you know, put in a call for needing services. And so it's really unintended consequences. Last week, the Department of Land and Natural Resources had effectively gone in and sort of done a bust at Kalalau, including the person who's got a lineage into Kalalau. They took him out, arrested him for bringing his jet ski in. You know, he's got a little micro business going on, mm-hmm. going in there. Hey, does anybody need a ride out? And that's not a legal business, but it works. And then so he got arrested. They took the jet ski. They burned the camp. And then there you go. We end up with that kind of abuse of our system. So
it really puts lives at risk when you do that with that helicopter.
It does.
Including the person being airlifted out.
Everybody gets coming in and doing that. Yeah, it's an incredible cost. So we have those ambulance shortages. I know right now, this is from an Akamai listener who communicated with me, was very concerned about the river mouth at Hanalei. This past year, they put in somewhat of like a dam or what they call a wall reinforcement, bank reinforcement up Hanalei River quite a bit. So as they did that, an incredible amount of silt has come out. And I did go down there. I was able to easily walk across the river to Princeville without getting my shorts wet. I'm a short person. The river mouth is blocked heavily, and so we've got a lot of rain coming. So likely that road is going to close. It closes pretty often. But when I look at it blocked that heavily and that deeply, sometimes if we get a powerful storm, it could jump the banks. And so when it does that, sometimes we have millions of dollars worth of damage in Hanalei. So that's an example of where we have these issues. So we don't want anything going on with that.
Dr. Fukino, we just had a caller who didn't care to go on the air, but he wanted to extend his thanks, and he wanted me to say that it was Stan the Man, and about 15 years ago he had a terrible accident with his surfboard. You had said it was the worst equivalent of a punch in the face that you had ever seen. You sewed him up, sewed up the inside of his mouth, and if you hadn't been there, he would have had to go to Lihue and have a really hard time. So he appreciates that greatly and wanted me to extend that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I know one of our young surfers as a teenager had his leg bit, you know, off below the knee on a bodyboard. Were you working then?
No, I believe Dr. Bintliff was on that day.
But thank goodness that KVMH was there. And, you know, I'm proud of him. He's doing great. That's Mike Kutz, and he is an excellent surf photographer. He's another person like the last man who called in who, when he walks around, you wouldn't notice that he's missing a limb, and he's out in the biggest of waves, and he's still got a really excellent career in the water.
It's great that they could have, you know, it's great that we're there, and that's part of the reason I think we need to have services as close to the community that is being you want to serve. And I think that's a big philosophical difference. Is there's the centralization, come together to one place type of philosophy. I just happen to hold the other philosophy where you want to deliver as much service as you can in communities.
I'm on your page. I'm actually, even when we concentrate so much services into Lihue, you know, we used to have a movie theater up here. You guys still have a movie theater. We had an airport. We had all kinds of things. I would go sometimes put 2,000 miles a year on my car when we have so much traffic problems because everybody's going into Lihue all the time. Nani, I want to really give you a chance to share your mana'o because you've been, you know,
quiet.
I mean, you've been saying stuff, but I when we spoke on the phone, I know that you really have a lot of perspective. So it can be on medical, but it could be on anything.
Well, we talked about when we first moved here, you know, and my thing was an advocate for the community. And basically what I looked at was education and healthcare. So there was a program that, well, not a program, but an organization that started up in 87 when we came, and it was called Ho'olalahui. And one of the things that I wanted, we established when we started the program with other people. One was LaFrance, and there were several members of the community that sat on the board. But one of the things that we're looking at is a lot of times people come into our community, want to study our sick people, and they would get a PhD out of that. So when that was happening in our community, I said, well, you know, what we're looking at is let's set up a protocol. So when people come and they want to get statistics and data, all we want them to do is when they come back, just have an informational meeting to help them with their diabetes, help them to comply, educate them. So we worked on that, and one of the issues that, but Wayne kind of told me, you know what, I want you to go into the morgue and check all the Hawaiians that, you know, what they died of, their morbidity rate and mortality and stuff. And so I went in there, and for 4 hours, I was looking through all of these cases. And I told him, I got out of there, and I said, I can't do it because they were dying so young. You know,
yes.
They were dying at 39 years old, 40 years old. So when Ho'ola started, it was essentially to look at Hawaiian people and look at their health issues and see how we could help them by educating them, teaching them what they can do to take care of themselves. So Ho'ola actually did very well, branched out, and now they're a federally qualified health center that's linked to the hospital, both on the east side at San Mahelona and at KVMH. So that was part of why this healthcare issue is so important, because we also serve Niihau, and nobody talks about, you know, servicing that island, but we do. When they're sick, they come over and they stay on Kauai until they get better, and then they're allowed to go back home. But the thing is, you know, they need accessibility. They need quality healthcare, which is what is provided through the state. So for me, That was the reason why I got involved. Not only that, but my great-grandmother raised me. And actually, when she got sick, she ended up in Maluhia Hospital. And I believe Dee had mentioned that some of their long-term care was shut down. And you know, when you're little and you look at your great grandparent that's in there, and the care, you know, it's hard to describe, but it wasn't as efficient as they are now. So when my grandmother passed away, I was thinking, well, you know, how can we do better for our people? And one of the reasons that I got involved in this was just to make sure that we do the right thing, but healthcare is accessible to everybody, not only, you know, the very sick or the very wealthy, but for all of us. So, I am quiet because most of the time I'd rather be in the back and just support whoever wants to be doing the talking. So I usually support my husband by just being here and let him share his mana'o as far as healthcare.
Have you, and did your great-grandmother share with you Lapa'au?
Well, yeah, she did share Lapa'au with us, and she did tell us what kind of medicines. But, you know, as you get older, there's things. And actually, when she passed away, I believe I was just 5 years old.
Mm.
But most of the time, she would talk to us and tell us what kind of medicine we needed to go get for her. Yeah, but when she passed away, you know, it was I believe that was a turning point on why it was so important that healthcare. Because if you look at it, Hawaiians, they don't want to go to the hospital. They think they're going to die when they get in there.
Yes. Well, I know that La'au Lapa'au is really surprisingly effective. I know that, like, for myself, when I've stopped going to the doctor very much, what I do is that yours? Okay. There you go. What I do is I use all my plants. And I learned from Kumu Ohai, Levon Ohai. Did you know him?
I've heard of him, but I don't know him personally.
He taught us a whole lot, and there are many kupuna up here, too, that know quite a whole lot. And so I think that, you know, I like that there is a movement towards holistic health care. Are you seeing that much on the West Side?
Well, I believe that's available, but not really. You know, I don't spend a lot of time in the hospital. Like you, I don't have a health problem. So I'm just there most of the time as a support, a community supporter for the hospital.
Yes. Well, that's very good.
You know, Felicia, there is apparently a way for us to improve our health and well-being that is free, easy, and fun.
Okay.
It is National Act of Kindness Week. It's actually Random Acts of Kindness Week. And apparently engaging in acts of kindness lowers blood pressure, reduces stress, and rewards everyone involved with increased energy and well-being, even people who see a act of kindness benefit.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. So we need to do that every week. And Dr. Wayne Fukino, I'm going to give you the last word. You got a couple of minutes here to drill your message home.
All right, Felicia. So I'd like whoever's listening to this to let your administrators know how important hospitals are. Let them know how important the state's focus on accessibility to quality care is, and that the state has a really important function to provide here. It can actually build something really wonderful for the entire state. And we can be the lifeboat for Oahu. And I think if they look at it that way and the value that's brought, I think they might think a little differently. So, but we're going to have to squeak, okay? And if we squeak, I think we can probably change their minds on some things and maybe change the direction for the betterment of all of us.
That's wonderful. And, you know, all of it starts with a diet, and I'm using that as a nice segue into this last announcement here. The Kilauea Ag Lots, I don't know if you guys know, but we have 75 acres here in Kilauea that are going to be like little farm lots. And so there is going to be a public update meeting at Kilauea School this Friday in the cafeteria there at 6 p.m. So February 19th, 6 p.m., Kilauea Ag Lots public update meeting. That's Yosh, our president of the Kilauea Neighborhood Association, and he's the main guy at the Ag Lots. And then also on the 20th of March, we're going to have the blessing there right at the park, and it's a great place for people to get involved. So any other event that you need to announce? Or?
No, I don't. Just a big thank you to our guests and aloha.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the County Council report is up next, and so County Council is happening tomorrow. And then next Tuesday is Planning Commission meeting. I know the Pu'ukumu School is one of the things on that agenda. And then Monday, I'm pushing for this, the Charter Review Commission is meeting. It's going to be a little bit earlier, 2 o'clock, in the same room as the Planning Department, and lots of big things are in front of it. It is the last meeting for determining what goes on as a charter amendment on the ballot. So if people are interested in things like districting for county council, I know that they are planning to make it harder to put amendments on the ballot for the average citizen. That's another piece that's going up. But they've got a lot of different charter amendments that they want to put on the ballot. 2 o'clock, in the Civic Center there, right where the Planning Commission meets, on Monday. So now we're on to the council, county report.
Hello, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a County Council report for the week of February 15th. There will be a Council Committee meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February 17th. The meeting will be in the Council Chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights in the meeting agenda. The Public Works, Parks, and Recreation Committee has on their agenda two bills. They are number 2612 and 2613 to amend the county code relating to the plumbing and electrical codes. A public hearing was held on these bills on February 10th. The Housing and Transportation Committee has a request from the Planning Director for agenda time to provide a progress report on the ongoing North Shore, South Shore, and East Side Transit Feasibility Study, which examines the viability of expanded local and regional transit service to better serve residents and visitors. The Planning Committee has Bill number 2601 on their agenda, amending the county code relating to an additional dwelling unit on other than residentially zoned lots, and this was deferred from February 3rd. The Budget and Finance Committee has two bills on their agenda. They are 2606 for an ordinance amending the county code, adding a new section relating to a homestead tax cap for home exemption and long-term affordable rental properties, and this was deferred from January 21st. The second bill is 2615 for an ordinance amending the county code, adding a new section relating to an assessment cap. Public hearing is scheduled on these bills February 17th at 8:30, and this is prior to this committee meeting. The Committee of the Whole has on their agenda Bill number 2614 for an ordinance to amend the county code by adding a new Article 6 relating to the registration of lobbyists. Public hearing was held on this on February 10th. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai/webcast meetings. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.